Final hour of power right here on the Chris Russell Show, here on the Team 980. We're always live and free on the Odyssey app as well. It's the youngest of Charles and L. Willingham. I'll take you up to 4 o'clock. My guy Craig Hoffman going to take you on your afternoon drive from there. Right now, taking your calls, we'll bounce around here in this final hour of the show because there are a lot of non-Washington items to get to, one of which is the latest chapter in the Book of Sanders, as I'm calling it right now. Shador with one of the most unprecedented NFL draft slides that we've ever seen in history. There is more madness to go along with that, quite honestly, sad-ass story. And we'll get to that before we get out of here. Also get to the L.A. Lakers as well. But right now, as we sit here on May the 1st, last weekend, the NFL draft wrapped up. As we sit here on the 1st of May, what is the position group in your mind that is most in need of an upgrade post-draft? The way I have it written here, the position group that most desperately needs outside help post-NFL draft. And it feels like a lot of folks are going to go with defensive end. I actually, and I kind of said it as we were leading up to the draft, I got this inkling that they were a lot higher on their guys internally than we were. Which is why I keep bringing up names like Javonte Jean-Baptiste, who Chris Russell laughs at every time I bring his name up. He thinks that I'm trying to put this young man in the Hall of Fame. That's not what I'm trying to do at all. I just can tell by the moves that they made this offseason that internally they like Javonte Jean-Baptiste, that internally they have high hopes for Dorrance Armstrong, right? They have high hopes for an outside free agent Super Bowl champion Dietrich Wise. So I felt that way more and more. I felt more strongly about that as we got closer to the start of the draft. And then on draft night, that draft weekend, they kind of proved exactly what I was feeling here by not going with a defensive end. The position that I'm looking at, though, is not D end. Because like I said, I think they like their guys at D end. I look at safety and I go, well, what the hell are we going to do with this position? You are a Quan Martin injury away at safety from having really no answer that you're genuinely confident in. And I know people are going to say, oh, what the hell are you talking about, Linnell? I mean it when I say this. You are quite literally a Quan Martin injury away at safety from not having a trustworthy or reliable answer at that position. And you could talk about, you know, safety and the market kind of being saturated and that not being an important position. I'll continue to reiterate it. You need to replace what you got last year in Jeremy Chinn. He played 94% of the defensive snaps, racked up over 100 tackles. He was the enforcer on this defense at a certain point in time. And I get it. There has been a love-hate relationship between me and Jeremy Chinn because I got on his ass at the start of the season. He was missing tackles. He was not a sure tackler. He was not as sturdy and reliable in coverage, but I think you can say that about a lot of the guys on this defense. Bottom line is this. You lost Jeremy Chinn, and to me, Will Harris is not an adequate enough replacement. So what do you do? I rattled off some of the names that exist. Marcus Williams out of Baltimore, 29 years of age. Justin Simmons, we know, former All-Pro. Demonte Casey, a guy that's familiar with this defense, right? There are a lot of different ways. John Johnson, a local cat. A lot of different ways Washington can go, but I think at some point they're going to have to address that safety spot. 301-230-0980 is the number. Which position post-draft do the Commanders most desperately need outside help at? David is in Hyattsville. What's going on, David?
Yeah, I don't know why you're making such a fuss about Jeremy Chinn. I think we need a linebacker, don't get me wrong. But Jeremy Chinn, to me, was a bum.
What?
I don't understand with these safeties. Who do they really teach these safeties how to play?
David, you chime in with me all the time. David, what I want to work on this football season, and I want you all to work on it as well, hyperbolizing things. He's a bum, David?
Okay.
He's a bum?
Yes,
he played 94% of your defensive. David, he played 94% of the defensive snaps last year. He was second on this team in tackles. Yet he's a bum? Come on, David.
Yes, he is. He used to always get burnt. He used to always have his back turned while checking the man. How can you catch a ball with your back turned?
I hear what you're saying, but his primary responsibility, David, was not coverage.
Right? But you can prevent the other guy from catching it, but you can't do that with your back turned. And by the time you try to defend, the guy done caught the ball.
For sure. I'll say this, and I feel like you already kind of have your mindset on how you feel about Jeremy Chinn. He played 94% of the snaps last year. No matter how you feel about Jeremy Chinn, there has to be an adequate replacement in-house. Washington currently does not have that. And I appreciate the call as always, David. Let's go to – am I tripping, A-Mac? You hear what I'm saying. And you're a Giants fan, so your opinion of the safety position, not very relevant, knowing who you guys let walk out of the building.
I love how you just, like, push me down before bringing me up.
But you watched Jeremy Chinn last year. He stuck out like a sore thumb.
Yeah.
He's like a cyborg in this defense. 6'3", 225 pounds, a real enforcer, was healthy. Do you think Washington fans are maybe dismissing how big of an impact he had last year?
Yeah, I think a little bit. I can understand David's, like,
he wasn't perfect, and that's what David was trying to get to.
Yeah, so. Like, I can his pass defense could be worked on, but to your point, yeah. He flew like a linebacker.
Yes.
That boy was all over the field, sideline to sideline, making plays. He was an excellent blitzer. So I do think that David kind of underplayed his role in the Commanders defense last year. Yeah. And it's definitely a hole that you guys are going to have to look to fill this offseason.
We'll see how they do it. They tried to do it with Will Harris, the veteran safety from the New Orleans Saints, a guy that Lance Newmark, the assistant GM, I believe drafted while he was in Detroit, so some familiarity there. Bottom line is this, though. All respect in the world to Will Harris. A lot of respect to Percy Butler, Jeremy Reeves, Tyler Owens. Revo and Quan Martin really the only guys I trust back there at safety right now. And I don't think it was the plan to have Revo be your starting strong safety. Reggie's in D.C. What's going on, Reg?
What's up, L Boogie?
What's going on, man?
Hey, look here, man. Man, we had a top 10. I think we were 11th. I know we were 10th or 11th in pass defense.
Yes.
So the secondary, I think we were fine. The pass rushing, I knew we wasn't going to take an edge rusher because getting to the quarterback wasn't our issue. We just couldn't stop the freaking run.
Right.
Saquon Barkley had like almost 500 yards in the three games against us. So I think we got a little bit more bulk up front. So I think I'm okay with my defense the second year under Quinn, and I think he's going to develop. What's bothering me is running back, man. We're going to run back the same crew. B-Rob, he didn't play all 17 games last year, so he's known to get nicked up. And you know you can count on a concussion or two from Eckler. No, you can't, because I think he had two last year.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know about the running backs, man. And then, you know, what was my boy, Rodriguez? I mean, he's okay.
Hold on. Reggie, I'm glad you brought up Rodriguez. I think the fan base is higher on Rodriguez maybe than the team is. You got to think about why he was able to have success coming in. He's coming in at the end of games. Defenses are tired and out. You know, it's not fun to tackle a guy that's fresh, but I hear you. He's a good back.
Yeah, and then, you know, you got the seventh rounder, and you figure, okay, if there's any position that you can kind of catch lightning in a bottle, like you can get a person that can come in, it's probably a seventh rounder. And then from all the reports, like this kid wouldn't have been a seventh rounder if the NCAA wouldn't have screwed him over for his eligibility. So maybe we can catch lightning in the bottle with our seventh round pick. But that's the one for me,
running back,
because I'm like, man, B-Rob and Eckler, man, they are good when they're in the game. B-Rob runs hard, but you just know they're going to miss, you know, three or four games. So the safeties, I think with the cornerbacks healthy, you know, we got the youngin from
too.
Ole Miss, Lattimore getting healthy. You move Mikey into the middle. I think we're going to be better. Linebackers, but I think for me the biggest is the running back, just because we have a track record now of injuries in the backfield, and you can't go in a game where B-Rob is hurt, Eckler is hurt. Now you got the kid who knows how he is in pass blocking, and we haven't seen him catching the ball out the backfield.
Well, that's the one thing I was going to say about Rodriguez. That was one thing I was going to say, Reg, about the seventh rounder. You can look as good as you want on them cut-ups. If you ain't willing to get your get your face dirty, pass protected. We all remember what happened against Atlanta. JD got pilled back. I was ready to pass the hell out. That was because Brian Robinson missed his block in pass protection.
Yeah, so that to me is more of a concern.
I agree.
Is the backfield of running backs than the defense. I think defensively we're going
to
be solid.
Reg, I appreciate you as always, brother. Enjoy the rest of your afternoon, man. Let's go to Ray and Clinton. What's chiming? What's going on, Ray?
What's going on, Dale? What's going on with
What's going on, brother? How you doing?
Man, I think Hampton going to do something in safety.
Ray,
man.
You know that's my dude.
Him up to play.
You know Hampton, my dude.
Yeah, Hampton's my guy too, man. I like Hampton, man. He's at Washington, man. That boy was a striker, man.
Yes.
He can do some damage at safety. But what I'm saying, man, you know, I'm not really worried about the safety if they're gonna let Hampton play. I mean, I was more worried about the edge, man, because I had them getting Ezebiaku and that boy David Walker, man. Both of them edges, man. They'd have been
David Walker
for a while, but
man, I wanted David Walker
I like
too.
Him.
Right?
I mean, he got some age on him, but that boy can play, man.
Yeah.
You know, but. You know, we got to go with what we got. You know, I'm not worried about the safety, man. That's one thing I'm not worried about, but I am worried about the edge.
Let me ask you this real quick, Ray. I don't know if you're just now chiming in. What happens if Quan Martin goes down? And last year, Ray, you know, we got really lucky with the injury bug. We didn't get hit by it too hard. If Quan Martin goes down, what's the plan at safety?
Well, they just got the dude from the Saints. You know, he's a multi-positional player.
That's true. He played a little nickel.
When you get somebody that's a multi-positional player, man, you know,
that's true.
Somebody go down, you know, we always say, next man up. But, you know, I mean, you got him and, you know, if Quan go down, you know, Quan played with two separated shoulders, man, or whatever the case may be, and he lasted up in there. So I got to give him his props. But as far as the other safety, man, I think they're going to put Hampton in there, you know, and I think they're going to be all right. Well, what I was worried about, man, was the edges. Maybe they got trust in the edges that they got, man. You know, they see things that we don't see because, you know, we ain't number armchair general managers anyway. So I'm just saying, man, you know, from what I've seen, they need help. But from the inside, they might not need help, man. That's probably why they went ahead on and got that dude Connolly, man, the offensive lineman, you know, they put more stock in their offensive line, which is not bad because they need all the help he can get up front, you know. And I'm out of here. Thanks,
for
man.
For sure. Ray, I appreciate you chiming in as always, brother. 301-230-0980. Let's get to our guy Andy in Maryland. What's going on, Andy?
Hey, guys. How are you? Thanks for taking my call.
I'm good, Andy. What do you think?
Armchair general manager is actually a great comment to make. That's hilarious.
For sure.
I want to circle back to the comments about Jeremy Chinn and calling him a bum, man. I don't think that is warranted, and I feel like he was a hard-nosed hitter. He's got a nose for the ball. He would track down tackling like nobody's business. The one question I ask about safety is, like, they got that kid out of UCLA, the linebacker, but he's a great pass protector. And he can definitely cover some ground. And you would want to look at his frame. I mean, he doesn't have the size of a, like, I hate to say the Jamin Davis size, but he, you know, he's got some speed to him. So could that be a potential person that might be able to switch to a safety position from a
linebacker? So he played a lot. So real quick, Andy, he played all over the place in college. There's a game he starts at Mike linebacker.
Correct.
There's a game he starts on the edge. And he played some nickel and safety for him. So, like, that's my guy that I think, you know what, at 6'3", I think he weighed in at 222 pounds. That is a Jeremy Chinn body type. My question is this, Andy.
Correct.
It's one thing, right, to make tackles when it's warm outside at UCLA. When it's cold and frigid in the month of November and you got Saquon Barkley one-on-one in the alley, are you going to buck up or not? That's the one thing I worry about with Kane. Can he tackle at this level? I think he can cover his ass off. You're right.
That's a great question to ask, actually. But you know what? I think Dan Quinn is going to coach him up.
Yeah,
that's
for
the way I look at it. They're going to get him ready. But thanks for taking my call. You guys have a great show.
Yes, sir.
Very knowledgeable, and it's much appreciated. Have a great night.
Yes, sir. Andy, we appreciate you as always, man. 301-230-0980. We'll take a quick timeout. When we come back, the kitty gloves are coming off. LeBron James in the L.A. Lakers with one of the most disappointing opening rounds of the playoffs that you'll remember. Here in recent memory, why I think the end may be near for King James. That is next here on the Team 980.
Wolves in five. Wolves in five.
That was the sound of the belt of the Minnesota Timberwolves whipping the ass of the L.A. Lakers. I mean, A-Mac, you came back with Holy Grail. There was nothing holy about what happened last night to the L.A. Lakers. And I'll be real with this, right? Y'all know it pains me to say anything negative about LeBron James. He is my hero. He is my GOAT. And a lot of the times, I feel like Bron could do no wrong. In game one of this series, this is what I love about sports media in our industry. It's beautiful because you get to keep receipts, man. In game one of this series, I went on a tweet rampage. The Lakers got completely outclassed in game one by Minnesota. They didn't look like they were ready to play. They got out-hustled. They didn't defend. And it feels like, to me, they carried that mentality throughout the rest of this series. Here is the first problem with the LA Lakers. And I'm a guy that, obviously, I love the Wizards, but I was rooting for the Lakers in this NBA postseason, right? And I'm now rooting for the Clippers. So there's that. But here is the thing about the LA Lakers. They can't guard a parked car. That's the problem with LA, if we're going to be open, honest, and transparent about it. Luka can't stay in front of anybody. LeBron James can't stay in front of anybody. And dumbass J.J. Redick, Mr. Know-It-All himself, just because you had a basketball podcast with LeBron James doesn't mean you know diddly-poo about NBA playoff rotations. If I'm Rob Pelinka in the Lakers, I'm wishing I would have been able to hire Dan Hurley. I'm wishing. Dan Hurley wouldn't have been stupid enough to not play Jackson Hayes the way that he didn't play over these past two games. The LA Lakers have been absolutely dominated on the interior in the past two contests. Why? Because J.J. Redick is smarter than everyone else, right? Shut up and stay in the corner, J.J. That's what you should do. That's what you were known for in your career. Shooting the three. Not coaching. Not your X's and O's expertise. It's been ugly to watch. In game number four, the LA Lakers were outscored 48-30 in the paint. Want to repeat that? 48-30. They were outscored in the paint. Maybe if you're giving up that much in the paint, maybe if your paint defense is that much of a problem, maybe, just maybe, in an elimination game where your fate is on the line, maybe, just maybe, you would go back to a lineup that gave you a little bit of success. How many minutes, last night did Jackson Hayes play? Jackson Hayes last night played as many minutes as my ass, and that's a problem. The Lakers last night were outscored 56-40 in the paint. They're giving up 3 and 4 shots of possession. Why? Because they can't rebound. Why? Because J.J. Redick not making defense the main thing with this team ultimately is going to be their Achilles heel and ultimately was their undoing. They were out-rebounded 54-37 last night. It was ugly. It was. Luka Doncic can't guard a parked car. He should be embarrassed by how bad he's performing on the defensive end. All of a sudden, right, Nico Harrison, as each passing day goes by, looks a little bit smarter, doesn't he? I'm not trying to justify the trade that he made, but Luka's looked like hot garbage. How do you lose to a team that shot 7-47 from the three-point line? Minnesota was 7-47 last night from three. Yet they won by 7. It's been pure domination throughout this series. I put a fork in the Lakers after game one, and they decided to wake up and smell the coffee for one game in game number two, and it's been belt to ass ever since. And here's the most disappointing thing about this. LeBron James and Luka Doncic, two stars of this league, their inability to tighten up, LeBron in particular, in the fourth quarter. LeBron James in the fourth quarter of the last two games, 0-7 with 5 points. Your king, my king, LeBron James, 5 points combined in the fourth quarter in the last two games against Minnesota. And we're wondering why they're about to go to Cancun? Are we really confused about why the Lakers are going home early? This is what makes it even better. This has been not just some two-game development. It's been all series long. In the fourth quarter of this opening round series, Minnesota, the younger team, the less experienced team, outscoring the LA Lakers by 42 damn points. And we have a duo of Luka and LeBron going out sad, folding like a cheap suit. It's embarrassing. Then I got to listen to J.J. Redick. Then I got to listen to J.J. Redick PMSing at the podium. Nobody wants to hear that, J.J. Muscle up. Should be a damn shame to yourself. You sitting there with big-ass Jackson Hayes on the bench. Are you going to play me, coach? You're getting out-rebounded. You get given up points in the paint out of the wazoo, and Jackson Hayes plays as many minutes as me? Shame on you, J.J. Redick. Shame on you. Here is J.J. Redick before the game being challenged by a very seasoned reporter on why the fourth quarter struggles of the L.A. Lakers are actually happening.
As you watch the film, what do you recall about your thought process in the moment? Sticking with the five you stuck with in the fourth quarter the other day. And is there an assistant or someone maybe that you'll lean on tonight, maybe to try to get, you know, some other guys involved if that opportunity presents itself?
Are you saying that because I'm inexperienced and that was an inexperienced decision that I made? Do you think I don't talk to my assistants about substitutions every single timeout?
No, I just think there's a lot of coaches lean on their assistants in those situations.
As do I, every single time. That's a weird assumption.
Thank you, Coach.
I mean, seriously? Like, is this what we're being subjected to from J.J. Redick? I just don't understand what is next for this unit. J.J. Redick, there are quotes coming out now because he had a his end-of-season media availability. Some of the quotes coming out, the Lakers need to get in championship shape next year. I wonder who he's talking about. See, here's the thing with Luka Doncic. He may never be able to defend. He's got to at least be a below-average defender. He couldn't guard me. Genuinely speaking, he couldn't. I would put Luka ass in the blender. He's a traffic cone out there, man. And it hurt. It hurt them significantly because guess what? Whoever Luka is guarding, you put him in the pick and roll, you dribble drive, you force the help defender to come, you kick the ball to the open man, and you knock down the open shot. The amount of open looks that the Lakers gave up throughout this series, they should be, honestly, flat out embarrassed. They just should be. And I'll go back to game number one and why I put a fork in LA after game number one. In game number one, man, the amount of open looks that the Lakers gave up would drive a grown man insane, make a grown man cry. And it's tough because the way that they looked in the second half of the season, the way that they looked down the stretch, would have led you to believe that this team was going to perform better. And all I kept hearing in game number one is, oh, Minnesota shot 21 of 42 from three. They'll never shoot it that well again. Okay. Of the 42 three-point attempts that Minnesota took in game one, 27 were classified as wide open. 15 were classified as open. 0 were classified as coming against tight or very tight defense. So it is very clear and obvious what the problem is for the LA Lakers. They can't guard. You can have LeBron James. You can have Tyler James. You can have Luka Doncic. You can have whoever the hell you want. If they're not going to defend, if they're going to give up dribble penetration as easily as they did, they will lose every single time. And it hurts me because LeBron James last night, you should have known what was happening last night with LeBron. Anybody that's surprised about the way LeBron played last night, maybe you just haven't been keeping up. LeBron James last night, 40 minutes, 9 of 21, one of five from the three-point line, three of six from the free throw line, four turnovers, and was a minus 14. You know why LeBron played that poorly last night and why he looked gassed? Because the game before, he left it all on the line, and they still lost. 27 points, 12 assists, 8 rebounds, 3 blocks, 3 steals. Yet the Lakers came up 3 points short. It sucks to say this. We may officially be in the era where LeBron James doesn't win at the highest level anymore. Because I don't know what the hell they're going to do. If I'm the LA Lakers, maybe you trade Luka Doncic again. If you're the Lakers, maybe you do what Nico Harrison failed to do. Maybe you should trade Luka again. That's how I'm feeling about this at the moment, man. That's how I'm feeling about this at the moment. Maybe Nico Harrison wasn't the big idiot that we all thought he was. Like I continue to reiterate, Luka couldn't guard me. Luka couldn't guard my big ass. Yet we were expecting this Lakers team to advance. I want an apology from every last one of you on social media who talked about, oh, I love when people overreact after game one. Shame on you. It wasn't an overreaction. It was a call to action that the Lakers are cooked. Point blank. 301-230-0980 is the number. We'll take a quick timeout. When we come back, more Shedeur Sanders fallout. Odyssey NFL insider Ross Tucker with some very damning information about the son of Deion Sanders. We'll get you that information next here on the Team 980. Okay, hey, Matt. I see you, shorty. I've been in my Jay-Z bag for like the last 3 years. That sounds like a long time, doesn't it?
Doesn't sound like it's long enough.
I know, but look.
Years?
I know. I'm just getting hip, brother. Relax on me a little bit. So you know my intro song and my rejoin song is The Death of Auto-Tune.
Yes.
Tremendous song. Guess what I just got hip to?
What's that?
Just yesterday. Not just yesterday, but a couple days ago.
Mm.
And I said, you know what? I may have a new song. You don't know.
You don't know what you do.
Man, Jay-Z is the man. Jay-Z's the man. 301-230-0980 is the number. There's a lot of different ways we could go here. I wanted to touch on Shedeur Sanders before we got out of here and just give my thoughts on what happened this weekend. It's tough. My biggest takeaway from the Shedeur Sanders fiasco from this weekend and the slide and all that, is Deion, for the first time, gave bad advice to his kid. Deion, for the first time, gave bad advice to Shedeur Sanders. His draft slide was not about the tape. His draft slide was not about how good of a football player he was. His draft slide was on this sense of entitlement that seems to exist within Shedeur. And I don't even want to say it's a sense of entitlement. That's probably the wrong way to put it. I think this should serve as a wake-up call to every prospect out there going through the pre-draft process. Take every meeting seriously, like it's your last, whether you think you're going to go to a certain team or not. Because the more and more that you read the tea leaves, that seems like what it was. Shedeur wasn't giving his undivided attention to teams that were picking in the late 20s because Shedeur thought, based off of what we were told pre-draft, is that Shedeur not going here, Shedeur not going there. The NFL said, I got something for you, Deion. We're going to show you exactly who runs this town and who doesn't. The Shield is always going to be protected. The Shield is always going to have the last laugh. But in this situation, I do think Shedeur Sanders can have the last laugh because he who laughs last laughs loudest. I think Shedeur ultimately can go into Cleveland and win this job, but he's got to put this stuff behind him first. And honestly, if I'm Shedeur, does a statement need to be released? Seriously. Do you release a statement? Do you Do you apologize for anything? I guess apologizing makes it seem like, yeah, I clearly did something wrong. I just refuse to believe that everyone's lying about Shador. Right? If it looks like a duck, walks like a duck, and quacks like a duck, it could be Aflac. But in this situation with Shador, like, if it looks entitled, if it smells entitled, if it acts entitled, it's entitled. He's a tremendous young man. That's what I don't want to get lost in this, because what I got really annoyed with is these personal attacks on his character. He's how old? 23 years old? 22 years old? As a 27-year-old, I can speak to this. Sometimes I need a foot up my ass. Point blank, period. That's how it goes sometimes. You got to understand how to lead certain people. Some people need a pat on the back. Some people need a foot up their ass. I'm a mixture of both. You can pat me on the back while your foot is up my ass, and I'll get the message. For Shador, his whole life, he's been given everything. He's been the best quarterback on his dad's team. He's been the best player in whatever locker room he's been in. And I think pre-draft here, Deion and company honestly misjudged the way the National Football League felt about him. This is why, and I know some of you out there get ticked off when I talk about Lamar Jackson not having an agent and how I think it's best for business for him. This is the argument why you should have an agent. Because if you had an agent, right, there would be a situation where the agent could say, hey, look, bro, I'd have talked to Team X, I'd have talked to Team Y, I'd have talked to Team Z. They ain't feeling you the way that you think they're feeling you. They don't like the legendary brand. They don't like, you know, you flashing your bust down Rolly after a touchdown pass. Some teams are going to get thrown off by that. I think the problem with Shador in this situation is him and Deion felt like everybody was on their side, and they just weren't. The one nasty rumor that came out about Shador Sanders, I think this was on Saturday, where this rumor came out. The rumor that came out Saturday that really made me lose my damn mind, and I'm trying to find the tweet here so I can read it to you all. This tweet, it was just no way to me that he was this, that he lacked self-awareness this much is the best way that I could put it. There's no way that Shador, this is from Rick Neuheisel, and I'm sure,
yeah,
A-Mac,
I've worked
you
with
know
him.
Rick.
Yeah,
you
I know.
With Rick.
Yeah.
I was talking to
Denton. I know exactly
about
what you're
this.
About to say, yep.
So this is a tweet that says, Rick, enlightened listeners on SiriusXM's Full Ride show on the College Sports Radio channel this morning, that an NFL coach told him that Shador took a personal FaceTime call during an interview with an NFL coach.
Yeah.
Instead of ending that FaceTime call, he stayed on the call throughout the duration of the interview. Now, here is where the media gets tricky, A-Mac. If you remember, it was reported at the Shrine Bowl when he was meeting with Cleveland that Deion called.
Mm-hmm.
And he picked it up and he passed the phone around the room. He talked to everybody. That happened and was reported on the record. So when I first read this, I'm thinking this is like the buttoned up formal, let me tear you down version of him picking up Pop's call, handing it around the room.
Mm-hmm.
If that wasn't the case,
yeah,
in this buffoon, this idiot, this entitled, spoiled brat, if he actually had the gumption, if he actually had the wherewithal to pick up a personal, I know you've seen who he had at his draft party. You know about Shanisha, don't you?
No, I don't.
The Jamaican Caribbean artist.
Oh.
If y'all thought Ruby Rose was.
I've always seen her name. I didn't know that's how you pronounce it.
I may be pronouncing it wrong.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, I'm just calling the Big Mama. You know what I'm talking about, A-Mac?
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Seriously, though, man. If he really lacks self-awareness like this, not only is it going to go bad for him in Cleveland, he may not be in the NFL for long.
Yeah.
I just refuse to believe, though, that this was true. It was hard for me to, like, and the reason I brought up Shanisha, or Shanisha, however the hell you pronounce Big Mama name, reason I brought her up is because, like, okay, if she calls you, you know how it is when you got a new fling.
It's been a while for me, so you tell me.
Let me not get you in trouble.
Yeah, it's been a while.
You know how it is when you got a new fling, though, man. FaceTime, in today's day and age, I'm going to put y'all on game, OGs out there, so y'all can hop off OnlyFans. FaceTime is the key to a 2025 relationship. You pick up what I'm putting down? FaceTime is key to a 2025 relationship. So if Shanisha was calling him, and he's in the pre-draft meeting, and he picked it up, and it's her, if it's Big Mama calling, I give you a little bit of grace. I'm obviously being facetious when I say this. My bottom line, big picture takeaway from this whole situation is, Shador, just do better. Use this opportunity to prove all of the naysayers wrong. It's real, and people love to point it out, but you've never really had to compete in your playing career at this point. You've always been the starter. Now in Cleveland, you come in, and there are four other quarterbacks in the room. If you do end up being the starter and earning that job, which I think he has all of the talent in the world to do, you will for sure have earned it. Now, to be honest with you, A-Mac, that wasn't even my Shador thing that I was ready to jump off the top rope about. Our pal Ross Tucker, Odyssey NFL insider, says that Shador Sanders skipped a production meeting last year. I don't know if you're familiar with a production meeting. So when Washington played the Eagles in the NFC Championship game, the broadcasting duo of Tom Brady and Kevin Kugler, whatever the dude's name is.
You talk to people before the game.
Yeah, you go in and you talk to them. Normally that happens. So say you play in the NFC Championship game. That would kick off about 4 o'clock. Those meetings, if it kicks off 4 o'clock Sunday, those meetings are happening Saturday night at the hotel. So according to Ross Tucker, Shador completely blew off the meeting, a production meeting. That is going to make the rounds, especially if this was a production meeting for a game that was televised on ESPN or CBS. All these people talk. So according to Ross Tucker, Shador skipped a planned production. Oh, wow. He skipped the meeting with Ross Tucker. Colorado versus Colorado State. There was a production meeting for Westwood One. Because I know that's who Ross does it for.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, excuse me, it was CBS, my bad. So Ross Tucker was doing color for CBS, and he skipped the production meeting. And Ross said he skipped the meeting only to see him in the back of a pickup truck afterwards. And it was the same time, or the second time in the same week, that Tucker thought he would have a sit-down with Shador, not to have it.
Mm.
We weren't really given a reason that we did not talk to Shador at the production meetings, which, as you know, the starting quarterback, it's very unusual that he doesn't talk. And I walk out of the hotel, and there's a pickup in front of the hotel, and Shador is just sitting in the back of the pickup truck. It just made me wonder, what did you think of Shador? I didn't get to talk to him, Ross Tucker said. He may be the greatest kid ever. I'd never know. We're running out of time, so we got to wrap this up. He's a dumbass. Can I say that, A-Mac? I guess I can. I already said it. But he is a jabroni. He is a clown. He's just not a man, bro. Hey, Mac, let me drop you an acronym here real quick, man. You know, the youngest in charge, YIC. I love acronyms. Me and my boys, man, you could appreciate this. In life, you got to do stuff you don't want to do, right? It saves me money when I go home and I go to Giant and I cook me my chicken breasts and I put them in my little wrap. It saves me money so I'm not going out buying Chipotle or whatever. The same amount of money I spend on one meal at the grocery store, right? I could feed myself 5-6 times with that. I spend that once at Chipotle or McDonald's or wherever. What is called when you do stuff you don't want to do, A-Mac, it's called BAMU. BAMU, Be a Man University. That's all adulthood is about, right? Mm. Is doing what you don't want to do. I learned that very quickly as I became an adult. That's the big difference. You got hella bills. You don't got to wash ass if you don't want to. And and pretty much, you got to do what you don't want to do. Shador has got to enroll in BAMU, Be a Man University, because skipping out on a production meeting as the starting quarterback, not man time. One final segment before we get out of here. I heard you all were wondering what 100 of us would do versus a gorilla. Tell you my thoughts next. Well, quickly put a bow on this afternoon's show. I appreciate you all tapping in on the phones. Big thank you to our guy Ryan Fowler of the Draft Network joining us. If you missed any of my conversation with Ryan Fowler Download the Always Free Odyssey app. Use the Odyssey Rewind feature. Go back to 2:30 to get smarter on the Commanders draft with our guy Ryan Fowler. Thank you to all on the phones again. Thank you to AMAC behind the glass. AMAC, you said something before while we were in the break, because I do want to let you all go on something a little bit lighter. It's just this hot-button topic on social media right now. Could 100 folks take down one gorilla? Yeah, I know I'm a scary dude, right? I don't take. I really don't like taking the elevator. You ain't going to catch me on no damn plane. You ain't going to catch me in no amusement park. I would rather die peacefully. So hell no, I don't think 100 humans, especially not some of y'all humans. Could 100 callers, let's put it that way, could 100 angry callers whoop a gorilla? Probably not.
No.
Probably not. Here's the saving grace for the gorilla versus human talk. Hopefully that never happens, because guess what? If gorillas decided they were going to take over the world, Planet of the Apes style, I'd turn into one of them. It's going to do it for the Chris Russell Show. You can keep the conversation going with me on social media. It is at NELL_BTP. Craig Hoffman comes your way next.